Afternoon, Chair.
Hi, Honourable Bishop.
How are you?
I'm good, yourself?
Good, can't complain.
Are you well today?
I'm much better than I was, thank you very much.
Great. Now we are happy to hear that.
Yep.
Good afternoon, Chair.
How are you? How are you, Kobri Dango?
I'm fine, and you?
I'm great.
Chairman.
Yes, how are you?
Thank you, Chair. My network is a little bit bad, man. I'm in the bush.
I have been trying to phone you for the last 2 days.
I'm aware. That's why I'm in the bush, but I make sure that I can lock on.
Oh, great.
Yes.
Let's start, because now it's 12 o'clock. We need to hit the ground running. Let's probably just try to get a sense from Hlupheka. Whether are we ready to start?
Yes, Chairperson, thank you. And welcome, honorable members, colleagues. We are ready to start because we do phone a quorum. We've got more than 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 members.
Thank you. Let me then take this opportunity to extend a word of greetings to all the honorable members of this debt committee, and also extend a special word of welcome to the Minister of Transport and also extend a word of greetings to the staff, both of Parliament and also the Ministry and the management team. indeed we are where we are, having had an opportunity last year to receive both the APP and also the strat plan of the department, and having had an opportunity to engage with the work of the department. It's only proper that share with the progress from the 2019 APP and strat plan, but more than that, I think it's only proper, secondly, to wish the progress and we can only give emphasis to the to stay home and stay safe, and also spread the gospel to our community, to ensure that we are vigilant and cautious in terms of ensuring that the spread are discouraged, but also to emphasize the basic of health in terms of putting on our masks, but also ensuring that we sanitize express those few words. Let's appreciate the fact that that's indicated by the committee secretary that we have a quorum. Hear from him as to whether are there any apologies that we have received.
Thank you, Chairperson. From where I'm sitting, there are no apologies that we have received. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Sorry, Chair.
Hello.
Sorry, Chair. I'm sorry to interrupt. Chair, can I just please submit apologies for Honourable Lodge?
Thank you, Chair. The apologies is tabled. And the second one will from Honourable Mushodi. Honourable Mushodi is attending to the doctor, and also Honourable Mahakhani has a bereavement. Those are the apologies that we have. I also want to extend a special word of welcome to Honorable Khai. We know that last year Honorable Khai had a difficult year end, where he was recovering and recuperating from COVID, and we can only thank God for his success in terms of recuperating from the COVID-19. We know that this can be quite stressful. We know that it's a process that we have been witness to how many of our communities have struggled to recover and recuperate, and we want to thank God for his health, having had a difficult year, particularly the last month, November, and the first 2 weeks of December, difficult for Honorable Khai We are happy that you are back, Honorable Khai. Honorable members, like I indicated, today's agenda is mainly sentiment, which I want to believe that it will be led by the Honorable Minister Mbalula. It will be a presentation on the annual report, 2019-20 annual report. Honorable Minister, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Honorable Chairperson, Mr. Kenny Muimang, honorable members of the Select Committee, stop an apology in advance that I will not see through this coming up in about 15 minutes with the presidential team that deals with the SOEs. So we're having that particular meeting. We present the department's annual report for the 2019-20 financial year against the backdrop of disruptions occasioned by the COVID-19 pandemic. The spread of the pandemic and the subsequent lockdown of our country only occurred at the end of the reporting period and therefore had negligible impact on our work for that year. During the year under review, we sought to prioritize and address inadequate legislative and policy areas with the focal objective of enhancing achievement of the sector's economic, social and security mandates. In the 2019-20 financial year, a number of bills were introduced to Parliament to address legislative gaps that are hampering us from achieving our broad mandate. Among those, two critical pieces of legislation were tabled before Parliament, both of which have been passed. This includes ARTO and the National Land Transport Amendment Bill, NLT. As we present the 2019-20 annual report, we must take note that a number of activities that were in progress at the time of reporting have since been overtaken by events that came to pass in the 2020-2021 financial year. We will address those issues in detail when we present the 2020-2021 annual report later in the year. Post the reporting period, we have moved with speed in closing critical vacancies in the department and our entities. This includes appointment of boards at a number of our entities whose boards had reached their end of term in 2019-20 or earlier. To that end, we have appointed a board for the Road Accident Fund, Rail Safety Regulator, the Ports Regulator of South Africa, the Road Traffic Infringement Agency, the South African Maritime Authority, the Passenger Rail Agency of South Africa. Chief executive officers were appointed in respect of the RAF and the Port Regulator South Africa. Safety and security, particularly in the transport space, remains our top priority. A security plan for PRASA has been finalized and implementation is closely being monitored within the medium term. The ultimate outcome is to ensure that rail safety and security occurrences, in particular the rampant vandalism and theft of key transport infrastructure, is tackled decisively. Users of public transport deserve better conditions in their quest to access economic services and social amenities. We have also concluded a very successful national taxi lukuta, out of which a number of key resolutions have emanated. will endeavor to action each and every resolution within allowable legislative and legal parameters. At the top of our priorities to ensure formalization of the taxi industry, to review the public transport funding model, including the introduction of subsidy regime that benefits the taxi industry, and to forge unity within the industry. Chairperson will remain steadfast and confident that we will deliver on the mandate entrusted to us by the citizens of this country. I've recently concluded a performance agreement with the President with targets that will find expression in our sector plans as well as annual performance plans of our entities. We will reinforce our oversight responsibilities and ensure that the performance agreement will then be packaged into a delivery agreement which emphasizes apex priorities that I have categorized for urgent attention. Among these are to coordinate the turnaround of PRASA and achieve efficient rail service for our people, to finalize the decision on GFM ETOLs and sustain SANRAL's ability to continue as a long, as a going concern, to address RAF debt exposure and liquidity concerns, to formalize and professionalize the taxi industry and address the subsidy regime of public transport to reduce road crash fatalities and enhance road safety. So these are the main highlights of what we are about and what we need to achieve. I've asked the department and entities to translate these priority actions into actionable programs and to also specify desired outputs and outcomes, timelines, critical stakeholders, and the exact pathway that will be followed to achieve these priorities. When we come back to table our revised plans, that detail will be provided. Chairperson, for the 2019-20 financial year, we have achieved an unqualified audit outcome with findings. In the next financial year, we aim to address all audit findings, not only in respect of the department, but across the sector as a whole. Safety and security, particularly in the public transport space, remains our top priority. A security plan for PRASA has been finalized, and implementation, as we would have said, has been implemented. We'll reinforce our oversight responsibility to ensure improvement over the medium term in order to achieve a clean audit report. At this stage, I wish to hand over to the Director General to present in detail what we managed to achieve in 2019-20 financial year, mainly focusing on predetermined objectives, expenditure analysis, and how we have coordinated internal resources in line with approved annual performance plan. With your permission, Chair, if you do agree, I would like to hand over to the DG and ask for your for recusal. Thank you.
Thank you, Minister. Indeed, the Minister is excused. The DG can now take the podium. Have a wonderful day, Minister.
Good morning, Honorable Chair, and good morning to members of the Select Committee and to the Minister, as well as to my colleagues in the Ministry and in the Department who are joining the platform, as well as the parliamentary staff. Chair, allow me to share the screen with the presentation, which we will undertake the committee through to the annual report for the year under review as the directives of the committee that we need to table and share with this report. With your indulgence, Chair, I would then proceed to share the screen. Honorable Chair, I believe the screen now can be seen. And having done so, let me now go straight into the presentation, Chair. The presentation in terms of the contents will touch a little bit on background, and in the jealousy of time, just do a quick dashboard of overall performance and then highlight some of the key achievements in the year under review, and also take the committees through the areas of non-achievement and the performance of our conditional grants to provinces, and also the human resource development initiatives within the department. We will just scan through that and have a better view of that, and look at the governance matters, particularly of the department as well as our entities, and present a little bit on the financial results. And with the indulgence of the chair, when we do come to this part, I would wish chair to, at that time, to introduce the new CFO of the department, and to also ask him to take us through that, and as well as the summary of the report of the Auditor General's findings in this regard, and what we have since done to address some of the pertinent matters related therein. Just as a start, Honorable Chair and members, as I've indicated, we will look in the main on performance of the department. We'll look at both the non-financial as well as the financial results, and we will then split the presentation into two in terms of that. As members may be aware, we have now aligned fully our targets, and during the year under review, work around that alignment was happening. Due to the fact that the elections came after the financial year having commenced, and the priorities of the sixth administration with the MTSF having been adopted after the financial year has commenced, the alignment process began in that regard. And our view was to ensure that there would be optimal performance of the deliverables of the MTSF and the MTEF framework together with what we as a department have set ourselves to do. Therefore, the overview, Chair, is that we had emphasized the necessity for our portfolio to contribute to sound economic infrastructure, which is seen more and more by the NDP and more by the turnaround plan of the government, as well as the stimulus plan, as a precondition for economic growth. Therefore, part of our highlights speaks to the commitment we share, as Minister has indicated, that public transport users and other users of our services require social justice, and that we need to addressing the main, the social as well as the economic challenges faced in the sector. Of import is an added mandate to us, the economic mandate of having to accelerate delivery of services, increasing job opportunities, and contributing towards rural development, and to reposition the department once more to do what it used to do in the older days, to become a hub for training and skills development. Of import, and which is we are largely muted about, is also the security role and function of our department and how we contribute to the broader security environment of the Republic. In the other issue for us, it has been the issue which Minister has pointed out to, the need for increased investment in public transport infrastructure. And to this extent, with our stated policy objective of a shift from road to rail, we are looking at, in as far as passenger rail and commuter rail is concerned, we are looking at an investment in excess of 10 billion every year for the next 10 years. And we are looking at, as Minister has indicated, the restructuring of the current subsidy model to ensure that we also integrate other subsets and other subsectors of the transport industry, including taxis specifically. And we also are looking at transport infrastructure projects that will improve access to opportunities for the urban and rural poor, and to create special justice in this regard. It was a breach between the spatial divides of the townships vis-a-vis the urban centers in terms of the CBDs and urban nodes. And to that extent, we are also restructuring our IPTN program to ensure that it is much more responsive to this need and that the prioritization of routes speaks to this. We can give you an example of Arieng in Tshwane as an example, and you get to see that while a success, it has not necessarily managed to promote the bridge in that spatial divide. And the current routes links the northern suburbs as well as the eastern suburbs together with the CBD, and also moves communities residing in the CBD around town. But you do not see the linkage of such routes with townships such as Atresville, Temba, Karankua, Mabopane, Soshanguve, and Mamelodi. And it is for this reason that we are restructuring our programs to be able to achieve this new objective that has been re-emphasized as what we need to do. Accordingly, the pillars of the MTSF, in as far as they affect us, with the view of addressing the triple challenge of unemployment, inequality, as well as poverty, the related ones within the broader MTSF pillars are achieving a more capable state, driving a strong and inclusive economy, as well as building and strengthening the capabilities of South Africans, and our department is supposed to plug and play in this space. Of the seven APEX priorities of the sixth administration, four of them are quite related to us, although we also contribute to the rest of the other seven, but our key focus is on this four, on building a capable and ethical and a developmental state, economic transformation and job creation, spatial integration, human settlements and local government, as well as social cohesion and community safety. In as far as performance information for the year under review, a dashboard there does indicate that we had a total number of targets as 29, and 26 of the 29 were achieved, and targets that were not achieved were 3. And we would come to this and also look at the impact of COVID in as far as our achievement is concerned for the year under review. On the DOT annual performance, if you look at the targets differently, and this time delineated by branches of the department, that it does indicate to you where the three areas of underachievement have been. And first is a target in administration, and secondly, a target in maritime transport, and lastly, a target in the public transport space, accounting for the three. They are branches where all targets that were set out to be achieved have been achieved 100%, and that speaks to integrated transport planning, to rail transport, to road transportation, civil aviation, all those so successful implementation of all targets. If we look at them by quarters in terms of the periods in which somewhere we have lagged behind, you get to see that the struggle with public transport right across all four quarters, and with the challenges continue to be set this. But you also see, in as far as maritime transport, strong performance as we started, and ending with the impact much later of COVID, and with us not able to finalize everything we set ourselves to achieve. But that gives you a global overview of the work we've been trying to do, and that shows you the performance trend analysis. You see in quarter one we started quite strong, and we were not that strong in quarter two, and we had a huge decline in quarter three and had somewhat of a recovery in quarter four, leading us to a 90% achievement. Some of the key achievements program by program would speak to the issue of the finalization in the monitoring report around the HR matters that have been besetting the department for some time. And having collaborated with DPSA, we then did successfully submit by March 2020. And also the action plan to address the AG findings were implemented, and we had managed to reduce and almost eliminated repeat findings. Again, in as far as risk management strategy, we were able to develop it as targeted having docked the department for more than a year, we have managed to come back and finalize it in this regard. In ITP program, here we have done a benchmarking exercise of five countries, Canada, United States of America, United Kingdom, and Malaysia. There were benchmarks that we did for the ICT strategies within the transport environment with the viewpoint of enhancing our ICT framework. This couldn't be more timely and more important considering how the impact of COVID on how we do work has impacted on us. And you have seen the pressures we have seen, particularly in the ICT space, particularly on frontline where citizens have to interact with our systems to be able to book appointments for driver's licenses or for renewals or for learner's licenses and so on. And the impact this has had on the backlog we now see and the subsequent extension of timelines for validity of driver's licenses. In as far as consultations on regional integration framework, the inception report was conducted and the draft framework was also developed. We are this matter has now been overtaken by events. We have now finalized even the final framework in this regard, and we will be tabling it for approval. We have done a literature review on the pathway for autonomous vehicle technology. This time around, having learned the bitter lessons of the e-hailing, disruptive technologies of that nature that caught us grossly ill-prepared, we had to, in reverse now and after the fact, to start amending the National Land Transport Act to provide for e-hailing providers, which couldn't be regulated prior to such. And we did not see it coming, and many governments were caught quite unaware. But now we have been keeping our finger on the pulse, and we have been scanning the environment globally as to what is emerging and what are the emerging trends. And we had, since the advent of the e-hailing, we have been religiously now observing the proceedings of the annual Dubai Motor Show, and we have been looking at the transport tech global exhibition, and we have been following the development trends and seeing and tracking which disruptive technologies are at an advanced stage. And having seen that in 2019, that the first flying taxis were showcased at the Dubai Motor Show, and having seen countries like Singapore licensing the first of those flying taxis, we are already in overdrive working on future regulations to regulate this so that we are not caught unaware. In the same manner, we have done a benchmarking exercise and we have done a literature review on autonomous vehicle technology. We now know that states like California in the US had issued their preliminary licenses for autonomous vehicles. And we know that Tesla also is at the forefront of production of self-driving vehicles. And these autonomous vehicles will become a reality very soon. And we don't want to be caught ill-prepared. And one of the good things we had done was in this regard to do this literature review and to look at what other countries are doing and to prepare ourselves and to start the process now of the regulations. And as far as the issue of the ERT, the bill is before Parliament, and we are quite excited that this has come full circle since 2016, struggling with the bill for quite some time to where we are today. We are pleased that the bill is before Parliament and that it will look into the consolidation of our economic regulators in the transport space to introduce a single regulator. It's been deliberated by the Portfolio Committee on Transport. Even this morning, they are in a session deliberating the bill. And we are convinced that it's one of the key things. The target was for us to bring it before the end of the previous financial year, before Parliament, and to table it and to ensure that it's deliberated upon. In rail transport, we have done the access regime guidelines, and here we are preparing ourselves honestly to the stated policy objectives. The President in the State of the Nation address did announce the need for concessioning of branch lines and for getting new private sector players into the scheme, and we didn't have the guidelines for this. We did international benchmarking and looked at countries that have concessioned out their rail infrastructure to a private sector of third parties and to look at how it was done. And we have since done the final draft guidelines. They will be consulted upon within the IC cluster of government and after they have been developed. Our target now is to have them finalized in the current financial year, and we're confident we'll be able to achieve that. In as far as the monitoring report on the private sector participation framework for branch lines, these two we had developed. The two are in tandem and they work together and they articulate with each other the guidelines as well as the framework. Speak there, and we have now 10 branch lines were identified and have been approved for concessioning. We are continuously engaging with Transnet. We have our next meeting on Monday to look at this, and with the Treasury and others to look at the concession framework. We are looking at both concessioning of branch lines for purposes of passengers as well as for purposes of cargo or freight. To that extent, we are considering starting with two concessioning branch lines, two of them for passengers, and we have presented a proposal before Transnet for consideration as the two lines belong to Transnet. This effectively, if it goes ahead and it is approved by Cabinet, we will find the end for the first time of a state rail monopoly in this regard, with new players coming in this regard. The Railway Safety Bill was approved by Cabinet for submission to Parliament as we are targeted, and it will be introduced within this. It is on the list of the Leader of Government Business role for this. And as far as road transport is concerned, we have sought ourselves to monitor the program. The AG had raised concerns previously on the monitoring exercise of the department over this, and that we were not supporting provinces sufficiently. We have improved on this, and we are quite excited with the bilateral consultations we had had with provinces and the progress reports that have been compiled in this regard, indicating significant improvement with the Samba-Sonke Provincial Road Maintenance Program. And you would have also seen, and I saw when we do present on the performance of these grants, you would see that even despite the challenges of COVID, the grant has done somewhat well. And if you also look, we have done a full due diligence report on the founding legislations for road entities. And as a result of this, the outcome is that now at our recent strategic planning session as a department, there has been a directive that we should consider strongly the issue of merging RTIA, the Road Traffic Infringement Agency, the driver's license card account, as well as the RTMC, and consider consolidating them into one institution. Obviously subject to the requisite approvals by the Treasury and to all what needs to be done. But the review has been done. One of the things we have also done was the identification of the 10 sub-campaigns of the Arrive Alive campaign and the National Road Safety Strategy, and we have begun with the implementation of the strategy. Since the implementation process, I'm sure members will be aware that in the first year we achieved a 10% reduction in road fatalities, and of recent, with the recently released statistics of the minister, we have achieved a 7% also year-on-year reduction. And this begins to show an opposite of before we implemented the strategy of where there was an upward trend, and now we are seeing a consistent downward trend. On the issues of national anti-fraud and corruption strategy, we did proceed, and we did with the freight logistics stakeholders, and we had developed a strategy in this regard, and the idea really is to make sure that the trucks that do largely cross-border and so on, and that those who are taking cool drinks and who are allowing these trucks to pass with wrong manifestos and cargo manifestos, and also with wrong weights and every other thing, and all the associated corruption that has been reported and which have come into the array of the department, we are now addressing that quite succinctly with all relevant stakeholders and also with the stakeholders within the freight logistics space. And the strategy has been developed as targeted by the end of the financial year, and we have commenced with its implementation. In as far as the draft road traffic amendment bill, we did present it before cabinet, and we achieved that deadline, and it was also now, as we speak, having been tabled within the parliament. The issue of the socio-economic impact assessment of the draft air services bill has been done, and we had looked at it, studied it, and we have now adjusted the bill. Our next step will be to take it before cabinet for its approval and then ultimately table it before parliament. We had also, in the space of maritime and aeronautical search and rescue, we are looking at a draft amendment bill in this regard, and we had prepared a working paper with the search and rescue committee, and we had gotten that endorsement by SAFA, and we are in a position now to take the bill forward to approval by cabinet for public comment. On the issue of the business case for a government-owned aviation academy, this we did finalize on target as we had agreed, and we are at an advanced stage now, and we have also noted the plans of ATNS and also other aviation sector entities, including those in the DPME department. We are now at an advanced stage where even we are considering the approval of a building of a new technical campus for this purpose to increase on the number of skills required in this space. And so the business case did indeed prove that it is possible and it can be done, and there would be a crowdfunding of the entities involved in as far as this is concerned, but with ATNS taking a greater lead in this regard. In maritime transport, an analysis of the state of public maritime education and training institution was done, and the focus there was on the analysis that was done at the DUT and the Maritime School of Excellence. And to that extent, we had now agreed that there will be several measures out of that analysis that has been done, and we will implement those, including specialized funding to some of these entities to ensure that the training programs that used to be run by the SA Harbour and Railways can now be done through a formalized institutions, and that there will be a greater relationship between this and some of our entities. Again, we did a situational analysis on the state of shipping in Southern African Development Community, and this has led us to the draft coastal shipping agreement that was developed as we had targeted. And that analysis was very important in showing us where the gaps are. And coastal shipping is quite very, very important to the growth of maritime. More so we who are located geographically where we are, with access both to the Indian as well as the Atlantic Ocean, which is, and also with the growth of ports on either side of the seaports. And to that extent, the coastal shipping scene, particularly within the framework of SADC and also of the SACU, the Southern African Customs Union, in terms of tariff setting, became quite important. And therefore, the draft coastal shipping agreement was developed for SADC, and it has been put forward. And therefore, we will hope very soon to move to the stage of consultations and signing. We had also submitted the merchant shipping bill as we had targeted to and approved by cabinet for public comments. And then after those comments, we will incorporate, go back to cabinet, and then ultimately come to parliament. Again, we had done trial audits. The trial audits were to assist us to ready ourselves. So it's us playing a devil's advocate before the real devil in the IMO comes, and forgive the pun. And the IMO audits will be undertaken as targeted for the period under review, so that we are within the annexes of the IMO and we are compliant in this regard. And we have done the trial audit ourselves to look at the gap and to also issue the notices to the agencies, particularly the Ports Authority and also the Ports Terminal Authority and so on, to ready themselves for the eventuality and for FAMSA to also get its house in order when the audits, the real audits do come. Again, we had done the stakeholder consultations and a concept document for marine energy efficiency program. has been developed, and inputs of stakeholders were considered, and the draft program was developed as we had targeted. And the program now is actually under implementation, and we are collaborating closely with the departments of energy, minerals, and electronics. In public transport, we did a survey of the extent of illegal taxi operations, and we had also compared what we have on the OLA system with the E-Native data and analyzed the findings, and we truly consolidated this. These were part of some of the discussion documents that we then utilized for the previous taxi lokhotla we had, and we had also agreed with the taxi industry about a moratorium for new taxi licenses until we regularize what we see that has been illegal for quite a long time and a matter left unattended for a very significant period of time. Again, on the bilateral progress engagements were conducted with implementing municipalities, and in this regard, progress reports were duly reviewed during the 2019-2020 financial year. As I've indicated, this has led us to now where we are restructuring the whole program of the IPTNs in this regard and to align them to where we should be going in future. The TAT Amendment Bill was approved by Cabinet on February 2020 and was duly gazetted for introduction in Parliament within the confines of the financial year as we had committed to do. Then we had areas of non-achievements, and I will also touch on the remedial actions of what this were about. On the issue of the GDYC, which is Gender Disability Youth, we had done an outreach program, and this outreach program was supposed to have been done by March 2020. We cancelled it because of COVID, and as I did indicate clearly that we will continue with the community outreach programs in 2020-2021, and we will also continue with the engagement with the sectors and their inclusiveness within our programs in that regard. Also, the issue was the annual human resource development implementation plan, and this was postponed to 30 October 2020 per the circular of DPSA. We were almost ready by the time frame, but DPSA recognized the issue of the challenges we faced in terms of hard lockdown, and we were then able to shift it. The corrective measure would be for us to begin with implementation in that regard. In another issue was the issue of finalization of the appointment of interns, and again, this too was disrupted by the COVID-19 pandemic. In maritime, there was the issue of the draft Marine Pollution Amendment Bill. We have submitted to be submitted to NEDLAC, and the ministerial approval to submit the bill to cabinet was not secured due to the postponement of several of the ICTS cluster meetings and, due to COVID, and those meetings were suspended, and whilst we were on the agenda, it couldn't be processed, and it could only be done after the hard lockdown has been done and after the financial year has indeed passed. Again, there was the issue of the detailed integrated public transport network plans for Amatol and Capricorn districts. This were delayed, and while the contract for Capricorn was pending for approval, it couldn't be finalized as the council meeting had to sit. And again, once more, the impact of COVID has been huge in this regard. The conditional grants performance, there you can see, we do have some amounts that have been unspent. They are quite limited, as you may compare the total figures between the amount transferred to the different provinces and also what was spent by each and every single province. And in other instances, you would see that the amounts left were quite minute. And that is why I was saying that the PRMG performance has improved despite the fact of the challenges COVID has posed on us. In the public transport operations grant, the PTOG, this too was reduced significantly because of the, during the hard lockdown, no vehicles were traveling really in truth. and this has been quite a big challenge. But we also know that we have had running issues about the verification of the passenger journeys in as far as each and every one of the provinces were claiming, and the operators could not necessarily prove. And in other instances, the AG had also raised this as a concern that we may be paying more than we should be paying for this, because clearly each and every one of this must show how many passengers they have really traveled, and the mechanisms are not there. We are remedying that. We are already on the issue of a single ticketing and a clearinghouse, and to make sure that we reduce the advent of administration of cash, and that we can be able to account for how many passengers really have been transported by operators, and then issue the subsidy by virtue of the number of passengers. On the network grant, this too was impacted by what we have seen. And as you may be aware, in this regard, some of the cities we have since indicated to them, including Mbombela and Musunduzi, that their projects would no longer be continuing. And even some of the cities you see there, some of them will be downgraded to BRT light instead of full service. We are now looking at the prioritization of the major metros and also the routes that lead to the townships. And as far as the Rural Road Asset Management System grant, here we have seen an improvement in expenditure. You would recall that in the previous years before this year under review, expenditure has been quite very slow, and our capacity to really monitor the work done on the roads by provinces was quite poor. But now we have begun doing the road condition data and collecting that, and we have also now added a new arm of traffic data collection as well. And we are using the technical methods for highways as gazetted with the ISO standards. And we are now including bridges and culverts as well in our measurements. And we are quite clear that we are now in a better position. We have begun even to project list routes to inform the municipal infrastructure grant project selection. And we are using information now much more wisely. Expenditure will improve significantly in this regard in the current financial year we are now in. But in the year under review, you can see we had indeed improved significantly to 44 district municipalities. In the human resource, I will not waste the time of the committee in this regard. But as you may be aware, we had continued with our program. And as we did indicate that we will, for the year under review, we have not been able to achieve on the issue of interns because of COVID, but we have recovered since then, and we had done a lot. But in the year under review, 56% of interns were appointed. And you may also be aware that our MOU with universities, 13 of them, is continuing, and we had enrolled about 189 students in transport-related career activities and so forth. Then we had also run successful learnerships under the under review. And by our equity plan, we are lagging slightly behind. We are now the DOT disability status being 10 employees. That gives you about 1.4%. And we need to be at 2% as per the target we set for ourselves. We have agreed to the strategy now of designation of posts for disability, and not just encouraging people with disability to apply, but to actually designate specific posts for this purpose. On senior management service, the split between males and females, which should be at 50-50, we are seeing it at 56-43, and we will also proceed in this regard to ensure that we recruit more females in this regard, and we have prioritized the recruitment of female candidates. But in the overall status of the department as a whole, females are quite more than males. And in as far as our equity statistics, we are predominantly African, and followed by the demographics of the country as they are. There are normally being the switch there what should be colored is Indian and what should be Indian is colored. On governance issues, we had approved the risk management policy as I indicated, and we had begun the implementation of that plan. We are proceeding with the combined assurance framework, and we have been monitoring this framework on a quarterly basis. And also the risk management assessment was done and the strategy implemented. The fraud prevention plan is in place, and we had also gone ahead and did our assessment, and the measures included the fraud scorecard, as well as the fraud health processes and the fraud checks. And we had been doing this, and our score by the international benchmarks was quite good. In as far as labor relations matters are concerned, we had 4 hearings in the year under review, which resulted in 2 dismissals and also 2 officials suspended without pay. In grievances, we had 6 grievances lodged. 2 of them had been successfully resolved, and 4 were not resolved under the year under review. And those who were dissatisfied decided to go ahead to other platforms, including the labor court, and others to the bargaining chamber. And as far as the disputes are concerned, there were 6 disputes lodged, 4 were upheld and 2 were dismissed. No strike actions were recorded in the year under review by officials, and precautionary suspensions were 2 officials placed on those suspensions. There has been a 96% compliance with the SMS disclosure framework. And again, in those matters of disciplinary action, the ones that didn't have to answer to why they didn't disclose their interest. Again, on the issue of declaration of interest, we had continued to assess and look at tenders above the threshold of 400,000 rands, to look at the SBD4 forms, and to look at information and to compare that with what we have. We have developed a code of conduct. 100% of new appointees were inducted in this code of conduct, and 100% of SMS members had signed their performance agreement. The training on disciplinary-related matters on violation of the code of conduct was undertaken for SMS so that we have better outcomes in terms of handling of cases. On internal controls, we did improve on this, and progress reports on the implementation of action plans were monitored and presented before the EXCO meetings and the audit committee. Compliance with the PFMA regulations and the SCM prescripts where the reviews were done continuously during the year under review. And we were happy with the outcomes, as we have seen an improvement in the drop in audit queries. On internal audit and audit committee, compliance have been achieved in this regard, and the following was done. And you may be aware that all quarterly interim financial statements and unaudited annual financial statements were being looked at before submission to the AG. The internal audit process, as well as the audit committee process, have continued to function effectively during the period and in compliance with the relevant laws and regulations. I now move to the financial results, and would request, with your indulgence, Honorable Chair, that Mr. Makoto Matlala, who has been appointed in the year under review a CFO of the Department of Transport, replacing Mr. Collins Letswalo, who has since moved on to be CEO of the Road Accident Fund, that he be allowed to present on the report of the accounting officer in as far as the overview of the financial results is concerned.
Here's the green light, DG. Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, DG and colleague, good afternoon. As introduced, before I start with the financial, Honorable Chair, I just wanted to also indicate that the annual financial statements have been prepared in accordance with what we call the modified cash standard, as required by the Treasury guidelines. And in this year under review, there are some slides that I'll touch on. The first one is about the departmental revenue, that is the revenue received by the department. If you look, our estimate in total was 326, and we were only able to collect 322 with a shortfall of 3.9. And basically the reason for that is that the dividend received were less than the expected by 254, and as well as the expected revenue from surpluses surrendered exceeded the expectation by 250.2 million in the current financial year. Next slide, please. Basically, this slide, Honorable Chair, is what we call the appropriation statement performance, where we can see how much was allocated for each branch, how much the branch spent, and what is the underspending in the year period under review. As you can see that in total, our allocation was 64.2 billion, but we were able to spend 63.8 billion. And this is indicating an under expenditure of 324 million. And the next slide is actually giving explanation per branch as to what is the reasons of this underspending. In program one, administration, there is an underspending of 6.6 million, which is related to compensation of employees, therefore meaning that there were vacancies that were not filled in the particular period. In program two, the integrated transport planning, on compensation of employees, we have realized an underspending of 2.9 million. Furthermore, on the goods and services, there's a 10.8 million, and basically this was due to the slow spending on number of projects, including the Corridor Freight development, the National Transport Planning Data Bank, the Multimodal Transport Planning and Coordination Act, the Freight Transport Model, the Single Transport Economic Regulator, Regional Corridor Strategy, procedures, computation, and recovery of overloading costs. Basically, that's the slow spending that resulted in the underspending in the ITP branch. On the rail transport, the underspending was due to vacancies as well as road transport. If I proceed to the civil aviation, on compensation of employees, there was a 4.8 million underspending, and then there was this undesirable savings, if I can put it that way, of 40.7 million, and this was mainly due to the watch keeping services, which the reason was there was an overestimate of the budget in that particular project. The program also underspent on other operational expenditure. On maritime, the underspending is of 1.3 million on the compensation of employees, and on goods and services, there was a 1 million underspend, and this was for the study, the feasibility study on the tugboat services, and as well as policy-related project events that were planned and other projects. The underspending was also on the transfers to foreign governments and international organizations, mainly because of lesser membership fees paid to the IMO than we have originally estimated. In the public transport, we have got 1.5 million on the compensation of employees that was underspent. And furthermore, we also realized underspending on transfer payment, and this was basically with the withholding of the public transport network grant of 98.2 million for the municipalities, and a slow spending on the taxi recapitalization, which was demand driven, and the underspending was 98.5, as well as a transfer to Sunrun of 40 million. If I proceed to the next slide, Chairperson and honorable members, shows us what were the shifting or the variance that we have done during the financial year under review. And as a result of the AMLA and reprioritization of the budget in administration, we have processed environment after treasury approval, of course, of in total of 23.7 million in integrated transport planning. We processed environment of 18.2 million in the rail transport, of 12.9 million in the road transport, additional allocation of 221.6 million in civil aviation, reprioritization of 19 million in the maritime transport, reprioritization of 1.5, and in the public transport environment of 151 million. If we proceed with the rollovers that we applied for in that year under review was in Program 5. It was related to Program 5 Civil Aviation Goods and Services, saving in the watchkeeping services, also in the maritime for acquisition of Inmarsat, fleet broadband satellite communication system for SAMHSA, and Program 7 for the COVID-19 disaster response for transport. If we look in Program 7, the rollover we applied was for the public transport transfer for taxi scraping, as well as the maritime transport, international maritime organization world time parallel event, as well as the finally in Program 4 for the Arrive Alive campaign for 184 million. Now we go to the statement of financial performance, which we normally call the income statement, where it shows the revenue that we received in the year, as well as the expenditure. In summary, at high level, you can see, Chairperson and members, that in the current year, we under review, we received 64.5 billion compared to last year of 60 billion. And in total, our total expenditure was 63.8 billion compared to the previous year of 59.1 billion. Then the next statement is the statement which we call in normal terms the balance sheet, where you can see the assets and the liabilities of the department. There we can see that the department have got the assets, current assets of 1.4 billion and non-current assets of 6 billion as well, and the total asset gives us 7.5 billion. In terms of liabilities, we have got liabilities of 1.4 billion, which mainly the significant amount there is for the revenue fund, which is money that we need to actually pay back to the National Revenue Fund. And all in all, our assets balance back to 6 billion. In terms of the statement of financial position, the highlight that I want to share with the committee is that we can look at the prepayment and advances, where there was an increase from 17.1 million to 66 million, and mainly is because of the scraping of taxi allowances increased by 59 million and advances to the Department of International Relations and Cooperation increased by 3.1 million and advances to the Government Communication and Information Systems decreased by 10.8 million. Furthermore, the bank overdraft increased from 713 million to 1.9 billion, mainly due to the reduction of voted funds to surrender by 322 million and the increase in prepayments and advances of 49.6 million. If we look at our current and non-current receivable, there was an increase there of 11.5 million and the increases is due to claims recoverable from our public entities and trading entities of 10.4 million and an outstanding claim for the inauguration of the president of 0.6 million. Claims from the public entities include the SANRAL 5.1 million and from the REF of 3.7 million. The major deviations, next slide please. The major deviations on the appropriation statement which I would like to highlight to the committee is that the appropriated funds increased by 4.4 billion, which translate into 7.4%, mainly due to higher than inflation increase in the budget allocation for SANRAL of 13.7%. In terms of revenue, it increased by 92.5 million and is mainly the increase in transaction in financial assets and liabilities of 159 million and a reduction of dividend by 67.7 million. The increase in transaction in financial assets is due to funds surrendered by the driving license card account of 272.9 million in the 1920 financial year compared to the previous year. Next slide, please. If we look at the statement of financial performance, we also have an expenditure which is a previous slide. Thank you. Yeah, just there. Here we are looking at the consultants, and which mainly is the business and for advisory services, which is an expense that the National Treasury want us to disclose, where expenditure of 236 million related to previous financial year was incurred on the maintenance of the e-natives and the SIU investigations, as well as the taxi scraping administrator cost of 115 compared to 66 million in the 2018 financial year when the services were not rendered for a period of 6 months. The budget for accident and incident investigation, which cost 34.9 million, was shifted to goods and services in the new financial year of 1920. On the inventories, we spent 12.5 million on the Shova Kalula bicycle project, and in 1920 we did not spend on the project in the 18-19 financial year. The operating leases spend more office we spend more on office accommodation, and the reason is that we were paying for the invoices of the previous financial year because of the slow submission of invoices for the accommodation lease. Furthermore, we want to let the committee note the issue of the material losses written off of 6.2 million of interest accrued on account that was paid late for the e-natives. We also, on note number 10.3 on the statement of performance, advances paid include an amount of 35.2 million that was expensed in the year for the National Household Travel Survey prior to the receipt of the services as allowed by the modified cash standard under certain circumstances. We also want to note on the impairment of receivable, which include a debt of 6.9 million that the debtor wants to set out against the claim against the department. Furthermore, we want also to highlight the contingent liabilities is including 148.8 million for non-adjustment and late gazetting of the toll fees and an unconfirmed balance claim by the Department of Public Works of 24.5 million. Another note that I want to share with the committee is the accruals, which include invoices that were not yet received of 50 million for the rental of the office accommodation, as well as 13.1 million for taxi scraping and 10.8 for air pollution prevention services. Furthermore, there's non-adjusting events after the reporting date, the expected effects of the special adjustment budget that addresses the government response to COVID-19. If I can just share that with the committee here, all the departments were required to indicate, as we were reporting for that financial year, the effects that although it did not have a financial impact at the point of reporting, but that it is an event that we'll have to disclose in terms of the requirement of the modified cash standard. I also want to share with the principal and agent arrangement were identified for the taxi scraping services and municipal fees because the services provider entered into the transaction with third parties on behalf of the department. Furthermore, a change in accounting estimate is reported because auditing policy was amended to require the disclosure of capital commitments in the 1920 financial year. I furthermore want to the committee to note the irregular, fruitless and unauthorized expenditure. The total amount of irregular expenditure is 113 million, fruitless and wasteful expenditure 115,000, unauthorized expenditure 1.339 million, and in total these three notes, irregular, fruitless and unauthorized is 1.4 billion. If we take the breakdown of the irregular expenditure in the next slide, you can see that the number of cases are 16, and this is it consists of the prior year of 3 million, the current year of 2.1 million, and there was some condonement of 637 million, an amount which were transferred to recoverable of 122, of which it gives us an amount of 113. Next slide. The breakdown of the fruitless expenditure relates basically in the current financial law is mainly of no-show cases which are 253,000, and we have written and we have transferred to the recoverable an amount of 81. That leaves us with a closing balance of 115. If we go to the unauthorized expenditure, the breakdown is basically the electronic national traffic information system, popularly known as eNETIS. That was an unfunded project amounting to 1.3 billion and it started in 2013 and 14 for 768 million, in the 14-15 financial year 392 million, and in the 16 and 17 financial year an amount of 176, and in the 18 and 19 financial year it was 980. In total is that 1.3 billion. We also want to share with the committee about the sponsorship, gift and donation received in the financial year under review. I will not go into item by item. The committee can see that those are the items, just to highlight few of them, especially with the VW providing vehicles for the inauguration, as well as Toyota for an amount of 658, and the BMW South Africa for the inauguration of 1268. In total, our gifts and sponsorship received in kind amount to 4.5 million. We also want to share with the committee the deviations that were approved by National Treasury in relation to, first of all, the 98 luxury vehicle for the presidential inauguration of 1.3. The deviation resulted in cost saving of 2 million, as well as a rental for 121 vehicles for World Economic Forum, where the value of the contract was 3.6, and the department achieved a saving of 50%, and also the leasing of 260 buses for the Northwest Transport Investment, the agency and dire situation on bus service to provide for Atteridgeville, Mabopane, and Hammanskraal. Lastly, in terms of the requirement of the modified cash standard, we are required to report on the events after the reporting date, which in this current financial year relates to the national disaster and subsequent lockdown led to urgent and immediate action that were taken by the department to prevent and alleviate the spread of the virus. Orders were placed for disinfectant, sanitizers, assistance provided to the taxi industry, the cleaning contract was expanded, and personal protective equipment was procured for the department. The goods and services were provided and invoiced at the end of the financial year to the value of 32.2 million. Government response to COVID-19 was also led, as you realize, members, to the special adjustment budget having been tabled in Parliament, which amounts to a net decrease in budget allocation of 4.6 billion in the 2021 financial year. As a result of that, number of planned projects were delayed. Further amendment to the 2021 budget may be proposed in the regular adjustment budget in 2020 and in the medium term for the following year to address the COVID-19, which cannot be determined at this stage. Finally, I would like to go to the audit report. And according to the report, the financial statement presented fairly in all material respects the financial position of the Department of Transport as at the 31st of March 2020 and its financial performance and cash flow for the year then ended in accordance with the modified cash standard and the Public Finance Management Act of South Africa. And then furthermore, I would like to indicate that there was some restatement of prior year corresponding figures as disclosed in note 36 and 37, the financial statement. The corresponding figures for that were restated as a result of an error in financial statement of the department as at the 31st March 2020 for the year ended. The AGSA also evaluated our annual performance report, and the AGSA have found that the annual report is useful, reliable of the reported performance information in accordance with the criteria developed and the performance management and reporting framework were concluded as follows. Reported performance information was properly presented and the performance was consistent with the approved performance planning documents. Indicators and related targets were measurable and relevant, and the reported performance information was valid, it was accurate, and it was complete. No material findings on the usefulness and reliability of the reported information were found. In terms of the annual financials, furthermore, financial statements were not prepared in accordance with the prescribed financial reporting framework as required material misstatement in the comparative figures for the principal agent arrangement disclosure note identified by the auditors in the submitted financial statement was corrected through a prior period error adjustment, resulting in the department achieving or receiving an unqualified audit opinion. In terms of procurement and contract, bid documentation for procurement of commodities designed for local content and production did not stipulate the minimum threshold for production and content as required by the Preferential Procurement Regulation Section 8.2. Next slide. On the expenditure management, effective and appropriate steps were not taken to prevent irregular expenditure of 5.1 million as disclosed in Note 26 of the annual financial statement. And this is the last slide for the presentation. And thank you, Honorable Chair and members. Thank you, DG and colleagues.
Thank you, CFO. Thank you, DG, for taking the select committee through the 2019-2020 performance report, both non-financial and financial. Indeed, I will now take this opportunity to invite honorable members for engagement in terms of the presentation. I have noted honorable Tim can take the floor.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me turn on my camera. Hello, good to see you.
You too.
Chair, yeah, a couple of things. The first thing, it's unfortunate the minister is not here because I did address the minister earlier in the year about vehicle license renewals in the press. But anyway, on page 15, the presentation speaks to the engagement with governments around the world on ICT issues. And I'd just like to know from the department, going forward, what level of work are we doing on tech solutions to transport problems in South Africa? And I'll start with the obvious one, which I raised. You know, it seems to me a bit, although I know autonomous vehicles are important, it seems crazy that we're talking about autonomous vehicles, but we can't put vehicle license disc renewals online. You know, and I'm not trying to compare things here, but around the world, and in fact in Cape Town, and I'm not trying to score points, Chair, please don't get me wrong, it is possible for motorists to go online and renew their license disc for their vehicle, which means that they don't have to go and stop, stand at a post office or in licensing authority to get a piece of paper. Now, in the current COVID environment, we don't want people standing in long queues in inside buildings. It's just completely counterproductive to everything the president tells us in the family meetings. So what urgent action are we taking in that regard? Going even further than that, there is technology around the world that is being used in those countries that the DG spoke of, where you actually get a license plate with a barcode. And when a traffic officer comes to your vehicle, they scan your license disc, and the barcode says whether or not your licensing is up to date on the vehicle. And that license plate stays with your car for its life. You don't have to go every year. You just go online. Now, that won't take everybody out of the queues, but it'll take a lot of people out of the queues. So where are we on that? I really think we need to, if we talk about fourth industrial revolution, we need to be serious about it. Another issue that comes to mind, Chair, and maybe this is an idea for the DG, but I certainly will be proposing it, is that the use of drones could be massively useful in transport, helping with transport. Just for instance, the monitoring of traffic. Drones can be purchased at relatively inexpensively. and I'm talking about the little play drones, I'm talking about commercial drones, that can then be pre-programmed to travel along the N1 and the N2, let's say in Cape Town, or on the N3, sections of the N3 to Joburg and Durban, and actually monitor traffic, have cameras on them to see when accidents have happened, but also to monitor reckless driving that kills the citizens of our country, and then to notify the SAPS. And there's also a massive employment opportunity there, Chair, because all these youngsters that we know are in school and leaving school that are all gamers and play these TV games are the perfect drone operators. We could actually employ so many youngsters to actually be qualified drone operators monitoring our highways all over the place, and also, of course, assisting with law enforcement. So I really would like to get comment from the DG on what is the level of imagination that the department have in terms of tech solutions, because I really would like to engage on that in the coming year. The next thing I want to ask about, Chair, is something we raised with SANRAL last year. A major problem that we're having around the country is the so-called business forums. And I know that the President spoke about this in the last SONA. These business forums that arrive on site, on construction sites, they advise, and you remember SANRAL confirmed, Chair, that they just arrive and say, we want 30% of this deal. And if you don't give us 30%, we will literally kill you. We will take criminal action against you. And we spoke then about an interministerial task team between the police and transport who could actually actively investigate these business forums, go after the people involved, and bring them to book once and for all. So I really would like feedback on that. Then another thing that just puzzles me, Chair, is on page 59, there is the use of consultants. Now, I know many of my colleagues have gone about consultants. Consultants, to me, Chair, speaks of two things. Either you've got a lack of capacity, or you've got a lack, or all these are special skills that are needed from time to time. So in terms of the consultants that we use, can the DG advise whether or not those consultants were used because there was a lack of special skills, that it doesn't make sense to employ those people, or simply because we have a capacity issue? Can we just get comments on that? The next issue is the luxury vehicle spoken about on page 68. Now, on page 69, it refers to the fact that VW, Toyota, and BMW donated a whole lot of vehicles for the presidential inauguration. Okay, they gave us a gift, which is really nice of them. So why then did we still spend a huge amount of money on luxury vehicles? I really would like to get an answer on that. It doesn't make sense to me. If we have those donations, why we still rent luxury vehicles? And Chair, it's the optics of it as well. You know, the average citizen in this country looks at the way we politicians operate and sees some of us driving around in big luxury vehicles and wonders, you know, why is that kind of money being spent when I'm struggling in my Jondolo here in Etegrini? It just makes no sense. We need to be compassionate. And I know that 3 or 4 million rand is not huge in terms of the fiscus, but it's still a optic issue. If we're getting the vehicles donated, why are we still renting? I really would like to know about the 260 buses that were rented. It says there was some sort of an emergency. I'm assuming those buses, because it refers to Atteridgeville and Hammanskraal, I assume that they are talking about transporting commuters, normal commuters, but maybe the department can just tell us something about the emergency that arose that caused them to have to lease 260 buses. And then who got that lease? Did it go through a proper procurement process, or was it a Regulation 36 in terms of the Municipal Finance Management Act? Can they just tell us some more about that? And then finally, Chair, the fruitless and the irregular expenditure. We'd just like to know about the consequences that are going to flow from irregular expenditure, because apparently there were quite a few people who didn't pitch up for stuff or didn't go through the right procurement processes to get travel and accommodation sorted out. What consequences are going to be there for the individuals that involved in it? And then I'm glad to see that on fruitless and wasteful expenditure, some disciplinaries are being, and I congratulate the department for keeping that down to 115,000 rand. That's an excellent drop. But what disciplinary action is being taken against those who have booked a flight or booked a hotel and just haven't pitched? We need to save every single cent. I'm sure you all agree, Chair. Chair, thank you so much for allowing me to ask all those questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Tim. Honourable Khai will follow, followed by Honourable Boshoff and then Honourable Dango. Honourable Khai, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson. Let me also greet Honourable Members, Minister in absentia, DG, and officials of the Department of
Welcome
Transport.
Welcome back. You look beautiful.
Thank you very much. Let me thank everyone for the prayers and the messages of speedy recovery, well wishes. By the grace of God, I'm back here after struggling very much for 3 months or even more. Thank you very much. Let me also thank the Minister for the broad outline of the annual report and the DG, the CEO, CFO for the detailed presentation. Also congratulate the department for achieving and also the expenditure, which is at 99.5%. But we just hope that in the next annual report, the department will get a clean audit. Thank you. Let me also start on the issue that was raised by Honourable Tim with regard to online vehicle licensing. It's really a struggle. I mean, I don't know why not all the municipalities should be doing this thing. It's even worse in my municipality here. Last year, around August, September, end of time. And now she was telling me that, you know, she has been told that she's the very last person for the day. So the municipality was not going to take any more people to renew their discs. I was so surprised that I had to go inside and then they called the manager. The manager also insisted that the person was the last for the day. I took out my phone and phoned the mayor of the municipality. He was a bit embarrassed, and then he phoned the head of the directorate responsible. And the gentleman then came and appeared. I didn't know who was the head, but it appeared that he also knew who I was. And then I was allowed to renew my license. Imagine if an ordinary person who was not going to go through that process of phoning the mayor and the head of the directorate. So I think it would be easier for everyone if these disc licenses could be done online. So I support the honorable team on what he's saying. Chair, I as we appreciate the report, but there are areas that there are no explanations in terms of the performance, why there's a slow or poor performance. For instance, if you talk about the slow filling of vacancies, especially this expenditure on COE and goods and services, there's no explanation why there's a poor expenditure. The poor expenditure on the on the COE. But I'm the reason that are put forward as to why some of them are not. For instance, there's the outreach program on the GDYC, the human pollution being. The reason that are put forward is to why those performance areas were not met is that there was the national disaster that was declared. My understanding is that the national disaster could not be the reason, because the national disaster, in my understanding, was declared on the 15th of March, 2020. The programs of the department, they start from the 1st of April. So if this was declared on the 15th of March, we were only left with 15 days or 16 days before the end of the financial year. So therefore, there's no way that you could have done all those other things that you could not do from the 1st of April, and you could only do them in the last 15 days. And therefore, you could not do them in the last 15 days because of the declaration of the national disaster. These areas that I'm highlighting, I think we need a further explanation as to why they were not implemented. I don't think it is a proper reason to say that it's because of the COVID-19. I would understand in the next report, the next annual report, because it would have the programs would have taken place during the period of COVID-19, and also the lockdown and the national disaster management implementation of the regulation of the national disaster management. Then going back to the issue of there are key programs that could not be implemented or a slow implementation with regard to those programs because of underspending. It's really worrisome because these are very key programs that could assist our people if they were really implemented. The issues that were raised, for example, if you look at the administration, it says about 6 million and on COE where there was underspending. But also the CFO was highlighting the projects that could not be implemented, which are around, I think, 10 million projects, if I'm not mistaken. So I'm worried about the fact that because of under expenditure, and also there are no reason why there's under expenditure on those areas. For instance, the projects around the empowerment of small bus operators, the Muloto bus contract design, the public transport safety plan, the technical oversight and support for public transport, the National Land Transport Information System upgrade, the National Public Transport Regulator, the Northwest Intervention, and the Sovakalula Bicycle Program, and the implementation of this integrated public transport network, as well as others as a smaller project. In fact, I saw that in two municipalities on the issue of integrated public network, there's no clarity as to why. What are these internal approval processes that delayed the implementation of this in the Amatole district municipality? Just said because of internal approval processes. It did not clarify what is meant by that. I think in another municipality, the delay was around the signatures. You know, the signatures were the reason why it was not, this was not implemented. Chair, I was also interested in the, we congratulated the department and also the provincial departments on the provincial roads maintenance grant. Most of them spent the allocation that was given to them. I'm not really sure with regard to municipality. We take the point that is raised by the DG that because the financial year of municipalities start in July. So he is therefore hopeful that the allocation given to the municipalities on the public transport network grant could be spent by the end of the financial year of the municipalities. I think it's something that should be monitored closely, but if perhaps the DG does have the current report in terms of the in-year monitoring report, if we could update us as to whether those allocations, because the concern, for example, the Johannesburg Metro, it was allocated about a billion rand. So I would say by March, they have only spent 288 million. So that would be like a 6 months, in fact, 9 months. And therefore, if you then add the other 3 months that the DG is talking about, we don't know whether they will be able to spend the balance of that 1 billion within the 3 months that the DG is referring to. But also there are other municipalities that when you look at in 9 months, the monies are very low. Msunduzi, Pulukwane, Rustenburg. But also the DG is saying that the money that was allocated to the Nelson Mandela Metro has been withheld, which is about 98 million rand. If we could also get an explanation as to why the money was withheld. On the issue of human resource, the misconduct and disciplinary action, the two dismissals and the two suspensions. If we could have an explanation as to what are these dismissals and suspensions related to, what offences were committed that resulted in the suspensions and the dismissals. On the issue of SMS disclosure framework, the compliance there is 96%. The question is why not 100%? Because my understanding is that all the senior managers should comply with this disclosure framework. I've spoken on the issue of the underspending. I won't be going through each program, Chair, but if we could just get an explanation as to why there has been a slow spending on those areas, including the slow spending on the recapitalization, why there is a underspending with regard to that particular program. The last two, Chair, on the unauthorized expenditure on the inertis, I know that it says started around the 13-14 period. And the CFO confirms that it was the unfunded mandate, but why then the monies were spent, which were around the 1.3 billion. So there's no explanation, and also there's no explanation as to what action has been taken to those that spent the money that was not allocated. Chair, I'm sure DG will know that when it comes to this committee, we would always want an update around the issue of the Moloto corridor, as well as the Gauteng freeway improvement project. If we could be updated around those areas, as well as the fixing of a commuter rail, particularly central line in the Western Cape, and the Mabona line in Pretoria. Thank you very much, Chair, for the opportunity.
Thank you, Honorable Hush. Honorable Boshoff.
Thank you very much, Chair, and good afternoon to everybody. I would like to share the concerns of Honorable High with regard to the under expenditures, especially with the COEs. And I'd like to have an explanation where the due processes were followed to transfer some of the COE under expenditure to the road transport program. If the department could just take that up and give us an explanation on it. And most of the other questions that I had were asked, but I would like to know the rural RAMS program. I see in Mpumalanga it's been fully utilized. Could we please get a report on which roads, can we do it for every single province then, which roads were maintained and upgraded and so forth? Because many, many roads in Mpumalanga, Northwest, Free State, the provincial roads, are in a terrible state. And these unmaintained roads are having a rippling effect with regard to the economy, because many, many people are not visiting, especially the tourist attractions, because of the state of the provincial roads. And then just the last one, you spoke about the disability component, that it's only 1.4%. Could I ask how the department's going to address it? Are the office spaces up on par with regard to access for people with physical disabilities as well? And by when will they reach the target of 2%, 2 to 3%, as is the national norm? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Varsho. Committee Secretary, can you just ask the admin to admit Honorable Lansman, please? Honorable Dalgo, please, yours.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I've been largely covered by Comrade Khai. But just to re-emphasize that underspending is not a saving. Underspending is non-delivery. So in those areas that were underspent meant that there was non-delivery in those particular areas. The one question I want to ask that is very, very hurtful at this particular point in time is the stripping of the railway lines in Gauteng. Let me take an example of the Cliptown station. It has been stripped to a plinth, nothing left almost. It's a historic railway station, stripped down, cables, railway lines, buildings, roofs. Now, after the report by the public protector, the security was taken away. Has security now been brought back? Or are we considering bringing back railway police to look at these things? Because I think the stripping of infrastructure is in fact counter-revolution. It could stop the reindustrialization of the country. And on a railway line that runs through Soweto, means that all the people who go through Soweto now has to use the road and increases the road usage. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Dango, for the input. And also the clarity seeking questions directed to the department. Maybe just from my side, let me also indeed express my appreciation from the leadership of the department in terms of the presentation made. I will probably just get a clarity seeking questions to the DG because I think in terms of the presentation by the CFO in the outline of his presentation, among the issues covered was the findings by the AG, and those findings mainly spoke to the irregular expenditure and also the fact that the statements, the financial statement that submitted had, were not prepared in accordance with the prescribed financial reporting framework. And then the third point that was covered that I think we probably need to get much more clarity on is the how the department is managing its contract and procurement. It's an area that was also identified by the DG. The fourth point that was also raised was the point that the AG found around the management not performing adequate reviews to ensure that the statement, financial statements submitted were accurate. The first point was around how the management is managing the expenditure, reflecting on the inefficiency and inappropriateness of the step that must be taken to prevent this. But also the DG did outline some investigations. But I think of concern to me is the measures that were putting in place to address these issues. If we could just probably from the CFO side just share what are the measures that are contained in the audit action plan to address these issues. But I think what we also need to appreciate is a reflection by the AG to say there is a slight improvement in terms of the audit outcomes, though it remains unqualified opinion or findings, but there is a slight improvement as compared to the previous financial years. But the concern that is raised, and it re-emphasizes the point raised by Honorable Dango, the issue of PRASA, it remains with a disclaimer due to, I think, the material misstatement in its financial statement. And I think it's an area that you probably just need to get a sense in terms of what measures are we putting in place to address those challenges. With regard to other entities, there is a repeat in terms of the AG's finding, though of concern to the AG is the issue of the implementation of the internal controls.
to most of these entities. The issue of financial discipline, the lack thereof, seems to be a matter of concern to the to the AG. But also issues around compliance with the legislation and consequence management that was raised by some of my colleagues. Therefore, I think it will be important to get a sense from the DG in terms of what is that we are doing to address those issues of internal controls and what they do to ensure that there is an improvement and no regrets with regard to the audit opinion. With those two questions, let me then give over to the DG.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thanks to the members of the committee for the questions that they have posed. Chair, just as a quick response to some of the... I'm getting some feedback, I'm sorry, Chair. But just as a bit of quick feedback in this regard, Honorable Tim Brasasas would know that, and I share with him what he raises in respect of the high-end staff we seem to be attending to, as opposed to us attending to the smaller issues. It appears we're busy wrestling with crocodiles when there are a lot of lizards in the house and we are just leaving them to roam around. And I share with what he's saying, but I need to quickly indicate that transport is a concurrent function amongst all the three spheres of government. And there are things we are responsible for as national government, and there are things that we essentially are not responsible for. And the example he gives about the Western Cape's role in the issue of the online renewal of car discs is a matter that is a provincial preserve, and all provinces make their own determinations. That's why even agreements with the post office are what is entered into between a province as well as the post office themselves. And we national do not play any role. And there's nothing at law now precluding any province from putting their discs to be renewed online. We do not feature much there. The second other key thing is that, yes, we do also run national agency services through provincial as well as municipal established structures and systems. And we have the E-Native system, which is a national system that, for a lack of a better word, we have franchised to the provinces and municipalities to operate on behalf of government. And in return, some provinces have franchised it out also to the post office, and in other instances, some to even private motor service centers. So to that extent, there is absolutely nothing preventing provinces actually from putting the systems online and ensure that the discs are renewed in that regard. We do not prevent, preclude, or discourage, or otherwise in as far as that is concerned. And they may do that. They may even share information with the Western Cape and proceed as that. We will not interfere in as far as that is concerned. In as much as we will not force the Western Cape, there are many people who write to us asking us why in the Western Cape they can't renew their driver's licenses at post office. And we can't impose on the Western Cape government to actually sign up an agreement with the post office. In the same manner, we cannot impose on Gauteng or Mpumalanga or any of the provinces to do any other thing in respect of that. I think it's a matter of administrative autonomy of provinces and the choices that they make about their service offerings and the multiplicity of that. Should we really be going online? Nationally, we do believe, yes, the COVID-19 pandemic is forcing us to look that way and say, all other spheres of government must also do so. In the same breath, the issue of the DLTCs are municipal as well as provincially owned. We national do not own any outline service center where we service people as a national government. All of them are attached to provinces and to municipalities. and the difficulties with running these things is that minister constitutionally and legally has no power to set up systems and other things at those centers. It is the preserve of municipalities and provinces in terms of our constitutional arrangements that have got to do those. The issue of the license plate that Honorable speaks about, here we have a sample, as you can see on my screen, that we have, and you can see right there, that we have an embedded micro dot. And I'm just putting this sample across just to show you that indeed we are in discussions and we are looking at the latest technologies around this and the scanners that will go with them and every other thing. And we want the full integration of the systems between this, the new driver's license that is being designed and every other thing, including electronic driver's licenses that we can also bring into being. How far is our imagination in tech solutions going? Absolutely wild. I think we are not ruling out anything, and we are considering all what works and all what we'll do. We are a bit far ahead of the curve. Why? Because in many established and developed countries, you do find this little exchange of money between operators and passengers. And that passengers do speak to tech solutions towards money. They buy tickets online. They either go to a kiosk, print a ticket that speaks to what this thing is. Most of the tickets are actually barcodes these days, and they get scanned and so on. So we're absolutely on that curve. And that's why when I spoke earlier, I did indicate that we're looking at a single ticketing solution across all public transport providers, including taxis as well, and everybody, and the reduction. In exchange of cash, so we are still way behind the curve. But once we have integrated all of these solutions and systems, we do understand our own limitations, but we do accept that SANRAL has the capacity and also has a clearinghouse that was originally designed for the e-toll solution, but certainly it can be adapted to do other things, and the mobility accounts that can come with it, and we have therefore mandated them to work on a single ticketing solution for South Africa, and have adjoined many of our public entities and consulted with provinces and municipalities relative to those that operate BRTs and so on, to say they must come on board on the consultative processes with SANRAL. They have finalized the framework of consultation, including what the solution they are proposing and putting on the table looks like. So we are trying to play catch up whilst simultaneously while also scanning the environment and looking in the field where's there. Is there room for commercial drones? Certainly. In the rail environment, we have run a pilot in the Western Cape already. And for the road environment, we will introduce it. Already the CBRTA agency have been requested to start considering this, and also with the microchips for trucks and all of that. What delayed us a little bit were the finalization of the regulations for ARPAS. But the South African Civil Aviation Authority has now finalized those regulations. We are licensing all pilots, as Honorable Member Bartosz says. We can train a number of young people. Indeed, there are four grades in which you can get a license for operation of this and for commercial drones. We're also talking with the Department of Telecommunications about space and all of that. We're talking to the Army, so we don't encroach on anybody, the Air Force, as well as the entities such as ATNS, to make sure that the space and the levels at which drones are allowed to operate, particularly commercial drones, and also the flight paths and the no-fly zones, all of those are respected. And the new flight paths on the flight graphs can be plotted for drones and can be finalized in this regard, and even the levels of height. So all of those guidelines and what are being finalized in as far as this is concerned. The current free use drones that are there that you see, and recreational drones, those ones, we know that the range we have agreed to is a 5 kilometer radius from where the operator is, and also with restrictions over certain properties. Now, with the commercial drones, we are finalizing this. I must indicate that there are companies that have already achieved a license for commercial drone operation, and they have been licensed to do so, albeit on a limited scale. We have not yet done intercity, which is what will be required for monitoring of highways. And we are getting there. We will finalize very quickly with this, and we are dealing with them with the necessary speed that there is there. And the problem is the number of parties we have to consult in this regard. On the issue of SANRAL, the feedback there on the business forums, we are attending to this. We have already resolved one for Makadodorp, and we are getting there. We are now, ministers, attending to the N2, Wild Coast, two bridges and the road passing through the Amajiba traditional community area. We're dealing with those areas, the Mtentu, as well as the Msikaba Bridge that have been held for ransom for more than 2 years. We are resolving that and we are making significant progress. We have consulted already with the political office bearers, and we have also consulted with the SANRAL has been on the ground doing work with the ministry around this matter, and we will report in due course. This is a problem akin to the whole of the construction industry, and we have been attending to what we have seen as a stumbling block. It's not an easy thing to deal with, and it's not just a matter of just arresting people. There are, in other instances, genuine concerns, and it also depends on which platform this are manifested and presented themselves into. Often, if they come through the traditional authorities, we are by the Batupilu Code, as well as the Promotion of Access to Administrative Justice Act, compelled to consult with these communities to genuinely listen to their concerns and to hear what they have to say. But there is also outright criminality of where people come to the site and stop construction from happening. That's absolute criminality, and people under those circumstances have got to be arrested. And it has happened with the Mtentu Bridge, as we have seen recently. In as far as the issue of the use of consultants, we must hastily indicate that, yes, the department does acknowledge that in some areas it didn't have the capacity nor the skills. Is this the type of skills we must build in-house? We have done an audit of that, and we have agreed what skills we now need to put in-house, including the establishment of an economic advisory bureau within the Ministry on Transport Matters. And that bureau will help us with the determination and writing of policies, which previously we paid consultants to do. We'll no longer do that. But equally, there are some systems which we will forever use consultants, because it's just cumbersome and too uneconomical for the department to build this. Let's speak about, for instance, in the maritime space, where we put buoyancies at sea at intervals of 10 nautical miles. And we put them so that we can determine the safety of ships passing at sea. And we also can scan and determine where each ship is at any given point in time, and to know which ships are in our waters in terms of the IMRA satellite provision in that regard. If one of those buoyancies go bad, or the waves have damaged it or something, honestly, building capacity within the department to go out to sea with a ship and maintain a ship and a crew that will actually maintain such buoyancy and so on, it's not economical at all. It's best this work is left to consultants who have private things. They have other concessions and other things that they deal with. And once in a while, they get a call from us to go fix a buoyant that is not functioning properly or malfunctioning, and they go fix it. It's economical in this regard, to maintain and to keep some services the way they are. So yes, where we have done a full review, and we have done it with the Treasury to see to them that the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer does agree with what we say, that these are the services that the department does not intend to build in-house capacity, but will forever or continuously use consultants, and for those that we know for sure that we actually can deliver on services of that nature. Then on the issue of donation of vehicles, I think perhaps we have been misunderstood. What has been donated is we have been borrowed the vehicles for the duration of the inauguration. After then, the vehicles went back to the owners, BMW. They had given us courtesy vehicles, which had we rented out, we would have paid this much. So in other instances where we have not been borrowed the vehicles, we had had no option but to rent out vehicles. So the department does not run a huge fleet. Unlike in the old days with public works, transport ran a government garage, a huge government garage with vehicles and so on. We don't do that anymore. We actually do a contract for fleet management, which we have discontinued, and I'll ask this department to make their own internal arrangements. And we are also looking at the best way of doing these things, more so when South Africa is a signatory to the Vienna Convention. And with the diplomatic exchanges and the expectations of a Class A protocol, it is expected that we provide head of states and head of missions and everything. We provide them with such courtesy vehicles as and when there are these important gatherings of heads of states, and we host visiting delegations and so on. So as it is now, the standard that is prescribed by DERCO is what we live up to. When they prescribe the vehicles and every other thing in the manual, it's what we live up to, and that's what we strive to. So it's not by our own choice that we prescribe. So it's not us who just choosing whether it's a Mercedes-Benz or a BMW. We will know that this is the class as is prescribed, and we provide as such. On the issue of the buses were ultimately never rented. We are required by law that all deviations that have been provided, that those deviations must actually be recorded. So we have recorded it, and you can see from the slides that there is no amount attached to it, because we ultimately never rented the buses. The story there is that the NTI, which is the Northwest Transport Investment, a successor in title and in lieu of the Botswana Bus Holdings, has retained some of the historical routes under the Bantustan. And the routes were never transferred to the new, after the demarcation board brought the areas that were former Botswana into Gauteng, including areas like Temba, like Mabopane and so on. They were never brought in here. And the routes that BTH, now NTI, serviced were there. Now the NTI, some people who it owed applied for it to be placed under liquidation. And because Northwest, and there were peculiar circumstances in this regard, and because Northwest was under Section 101B and it was under administration, and the Department of Transport was under administration by the National Department, and equally the NTI is a is an entity of that provincial department, it became our concern and our problem to attend to. And it is for this reason that the Treasury had said, because BTH has been placed under provisional liquidation or NTI, it can't provide services nor buses. And overnight, thousands of commuters were stranded in Mabopane and in Atresville and in Hammanskraal, and they couldn't reach Pretoria. Some slept under bridges and so got it down because there were no transportation for them. We were forced by circumstances to intervene. And during the preceding intervention, as we were busy trying to go now to an emergency tender with the deviation, because what we requested was a deviation not to do a necessary procurement competitive bidding, but to shorten the period within which it was done. Typically, a tender by law must be advertised for 21 days. We're asking that it be advertised for 5 days so that we can adjudicate quickly and appoint. However, during that 5 days, the NTI successfully managed, because we were fighting this on both fronts. We were saying, so long, let's provide a temporary solution. But on the other hand, let's fight this provisional liquidation because it will create permanent problems for us. So we went to court on the other hand, and we won in court, and the court set aside the provisional liquidation, thus allowing the NTI to continue providing services. So there was no need for us then to proceed. And therefore, the questions of who got the lease and what will not arise in this regard. On the other issues raised, the two dismissals, Honorable Khai, that were there, one of them is of the official who in the licensing, aviation licensing, who, in our viewpoint, had actually provided rights to flights to airlines and to operators beyond the scope of his powers. And to that extent, it has created a number of challenges for South Africa. and we were correcting what is essentially wrong and dismissed the person. The other is an official in SCM who had forged documents, procurement documents, and there was charged, found out, and investigated, and then dismissed. On the issue of the slow filling of vacancies, indeed, the vacancy filling process has been quite slow. I think that we must not mince about it in this regard. We have ramped up our filling of vacancies in this regard, and we are filling vacancies almost weekly. At the time, we had set ourselves a target of filling 78 vacancies within a space of 3 months, and we are working day and night to make sure that that matter is corrected. Indeed, the reasons we gave about COVID on the appointment of or the activity with gender disability youth and committee work, we had in the financially under review 10 events planned. We had by that period implemented 9, and the 10th activity was scheduled to take place on the 20th of March, and the disaster was then declared on the 15th. So indeed, we are correct. COVID is what was the main reason why the activity plan for the 20th did not take place. In the same manner, even with the interns, the selection committee had done work and had synthesized the report and had finalized with the process. And placement was due to occur during that period, and the lockdown hit. The announcement or the declaration was made of the hard lockdown, and therefore placement couldn't take place with officials that or the interns that should have started on the 1st of February. So that last week was quite critical for us. And in the same breath, I can also speak about the Marine Bill, which was scheduled and was on the agenda of the ICTS committee for the 25th of March 2020, and couldn't take place due to the declaration as scheduled. The issue about Amathole, I need to highlight it quickly. Everybody knows that Amathole was dysfunctional at that stage. Council meetings were not sitting and every other thing. And I'm sure by now it has been in the news that the province has placed it under administration. Now the situation has deteriorated even much more further to the extent that they couldn't even pay salaries, or they had declared that they'll not be able to pay salaries for 4 months. So they have been having huge challenges in this regard. As a result, back then, we were struggling with getting approvals from them. In the same manner, as we do indicate with Msunduzi, with the issue of signatures, of where there is an inherent fight apparently between the mayor and the municipal manager, and the municipal manager is adamant that he's not signing. So with things like that, projects get to a standstill. And what then happens is that we can't proceed with the work done until the legalities have been finalized and until matters of that nature have been sorted out. We did indeed withheld 98 million from Nelson Mandela. And the reason for withholding it was that the corrective steps we have said they must undertake, including the issues that we have raised and our concerns about the routes and the planning of that, were not finally done on time during the financial year. And we withheld that money because it will have become actually regular on our part to pay and continue paying Nelson Mandela in this regard. Why did we continue with Inatis when it was declared unauthorized? There was no choice. I wasn't here, but I take responsibility for even what happened before I came as accounting officer, as leader of administration in this business or in this department. The truth of the matter is that Inatis is mission critical, and we can't do without. And if there was a court dispute, as you know, and which government won some parts of that court dispute and won lost another parts, including even the parts about employees and so on. Truth be told is that we needed to internalize Inatis, we needed to open up the gateways, we needed to domesticate it within government outside of private hands. And there was no way money, the department couldn't spend that money. it had to make sure that the system continues. Otherwise, while the court dispute was happening, it would have meant about 2 years of no E-natives. And this means 2 years of no licenses and no license renewals, no what, no. It was just unthinkable. So the department continued, albeit the fact that there was a declaration, it was way too deep and too late for it to pull out, and it needed to make the system work. And therefore, it was done. Since then, it has been normalized. We have regularized everything related to E-natives. Now, we have even cleaned up the last of the remainder of the challenges we had with E-natives in the last financial year, including the issue of the last of the transfers and the last of the court cases to be heard on this matter. Judgment was delivered in the last financial year. And unfortunately, government lost, or the RTMC, an agency of government, lost that. And we were told that we should have taken the staff of the former company that we took the E-natives from. So with it, we have experienced a new contingent liability of about 280 million or so that we need to do to settle with those staff members of the former company. On taxi recap, there is a resistance, and it has been there up until the taxi lekhotla that was held to resolve on the matters. The resistance has been that the associations, Santaco, as well as the NTA, were encouraging their members not to apply for the recap and not to participate in the scheme until the issue of the 60% ownership of the project has been resolved. So those matters have been agreed to at the lekhotla, negotiated, resolved, and we have seen a slight pickup in applications for this, and it is happening now. They have begun doing that. On the Mloto corridor, two projects in one originally envisaged, the rail corridor as well as the road corridor. Rail corridor feasibility studies done, said it is feasible provided there is a government underwriting and guarantee. Treasury has refused to provide that guarantee. And as a result, we have not seen any appetite, including the Chinese company that had signed for this, the China Construction and Communications Company, that said it could build them a lot of corridor on a concession. It wanted a guarantee. That guarantee was not forthcoming. The deal has since fallen away because Treasury doesn't have the appetite to do this. Why? It is felt that the Mloto corridor, or the village of Mloto and surrounding villages in Mpumalanga, people who travel on the Mloto road every day to Pretoria, population size, they are quite few to justify the investment of the rail. Secondly, there is no existing rail network, so it's not an easy concession. It means that the entire infrastructure must be laid from scratch. And this doesn't seem to be appetizing to anybody, because it will suggest quite very steep ticket prices for this train. So then it will not necessarily solve the issue of the poor people of Mpumalanga, because the original thing were two reasons. First, to reduce on road carnage on what was called the killer road, to remove many of those people of the buses from the road onto the rail, but secondly, to provide a cheap transportation mode for them. Now with that, it will mean that it is not affordable. So this was the thinking and the rationale why the guarantee was not issued, because the project was not seen as financially viable from that point of view. Therefore, the idea was then to fast track the implementation of the Mloto Road Corridor by improving the so-called killer road into making it a safer road, straightening its coordinates, widening it, introducing road shoulders, and even considering a dedicated bus lane. If necessary, more like a long BRT route, so to say, on the corridor, to make it much more safer, to make it more efficient, and to bring commuters to the urban centers much more easier. That was seen as viable, as affordable, and as cheap. And negotiations began around this matter. Both Limpopo and Mpumalanga handed over their roads to SANRAL quickly. Gauteng resisted for quite a significant period of time. And we also did a study looking at where most of the accidents were happening. They were happening on the Gauteng side of things. And there we had agreed that Gauteng needs to hand over the road. Finally, we had a settlement with them. They did hand over the road, but the money for the road didn't follow the road. It came, for a lack of a better word, naked as it was. We assimilated the road, Honorable Chair and members, and we since proclaimed the road as a national road on all the three parts. Now it's seamless. SANRAL has began with work, road works on the Limpopo as well as on the Mpumalanga side have started, and work around Gauteng will commence soonest. And this is being done. We have about 3 weeks ago signed expropriation notices for land in the road shoulder and to also expand on the road reserves and the road servitudes. So we are working on that right now, and we will proceed to make it a much more better road. The communities there remain unhappy. They want both the rail corridor and also the road corridor. But the investment doesn't seem to, investment required doesn't seem to justify what is in demand. And the public protector has undertaken to investigate the matter and to get all parties. We will cooperate fully with the public protector investigation into this matter. On GFIP, the matter is in cabinet's hands, and we will wait for the cabinet announcement in this regard. We, Transport and Treasury, did what was necessary to be done. And ministers of Transport and Treasury were mandated to actually meet and see how this matter can be brought to finality. They had done so, and their report has been packaged, and Treasury will be sending a CAP memo to Cabinet to have a final say on the matter. We will brief the committee as it comes up. On commuter rail, Mabopane and Central Line, work is underway. We have signed a new implementation protocol with the Housing Development Agency of Human Settlements. That will start with the relocation process of the people who have settled inside the rail reserve and on top of the rail lines. We have also finalized the land swap agreement of Philippi and Captain's Club for the relocation of the rail railway depot, and that has been finalized, and we tender has been finalized for the designs, and appointment has been made for the companies to design the corridor protection walls across the that, and work on recovery of the substations has begun both in Mabopane and on the Central Line. And we are also looking at overhead electrical traction equipment, at the replacement thereof. And we are also looking at station upgrades. In Mabopane, we have already completed two stations on that line, and we are working on further improvements in this regard. So work on the two lines is underway. And as soon as the designs are finalized, we will start commence with construction of those walls. And we will then be able to make sure that everything we bring inside the lines is well maintained and protected. Honorable Boshoff, the shift of funds from COE to roads was with the approval of the Treasury. And we will bring a breakdown of the roads per province as you have requested. We did not prepare it for this meeting, but we will submit it to the committee secretariat and to the chair. To share with members that, and a breakdown will be done in this regard per province as you have requested. As I did indicate earlier about the disability matter, that we have chosen a strategy to designate posts, and I think that that's what will help us, because if we are to always await and just say people with disability are encouraged to apply, it's not enough, because often we do not find suitably qualified people who have applied for a specific position and who have on their Z83 declared that they are disabled. So if we reserve positions specific for disabled and we say only disabled people must apply, we still have to see that the test of our strategy, legally speaking, because this we consider as positive discrimination, which is accepted by constitutional principles, but this matter has not been tested in the courts as yet. So we will see how that plays out, and if there is objections to what we're trying to do, and we are suspecting that the first objections will come from the unions, but we had made a decision at our strat planning session that this is what we need to do to achieve the target of 2% to 3%. We will pursue that strategy and see how far it will take us. We will keep the committee abreast of that in as far as this matter is concerned. On the matters raised by the chair, the AG concerns, we see them. Chair, I must be the first one to acknowledge that the committee must recall that the department had not had a full-time DG for more than a period of 4 years. And it has not been good with so many acting people in positions and all of that. Didn't augur well for the certainty and for the stability and even for integrity of decision-making processes in this regard. So we have stabilized largely that part. There is stability in terms of this. There is certainty about the processes that we are introducing. Consequence management has been heightened. And you can see from what we are dealing with. And in this case, we are not only dealing with lizards, we are also disciplining crocodiles. So we are quite ready for this, and we are keen on implementing this. And you would also take pleasure in knowing that at the last audit committee meeting, the audit committee as well as the AG acknowledged the significant improvements that have been seen, particularly in implementation of the audit action plan. And that is why I'm saying that to this extent, we are almost, we are left with just one issue, but we have almost eradicated all of the previous repeat findings. And this just shows to the commitment that we have put there. And as far as entities are concerned, our oversight capacity for entities has been improved in the Office of the Director General. We have now declared a new branch that is public entity oversight with requisite skills across all modes. And his job is to look at the governance matters of entity service and early warning system. Entity by entity on a quarterly basis, we do a financial health analysis, and we also look at internal compliance and controls now. And we do issue early warnings to them. And as you may now know, we are busy now with two of our entities, PRASA, which we have brought some degree of stability, but also the SAMHSA. We have had a meeting with the board to look and ventilate specifically at their audit outcomes and encourage the board to take decisions. Tonight, we are also having another meeting, a follow-up meeting with the board of the Road Traffic Infringement Agency, once more to look at consequence management and at the outcomes of the AG's report and what the AG has reported to us. So these matters we take quite straight to heart. And I personally have written as DG to several of the accounting officers in these entities, indicating what the AG has raised and what our expectations are. We are also introducing a new instrument beginning 1 April 2021. We did inform the entities last year that beginning 1st of April, in addition to the shareholder compact signed by the minister and the chair of the board, there will be a transfer payment agreement signed by the DG with that. That will spell out even more detailed the issues pertaining to the audit outcomes, what our performance expectations are of this board, and the type of audit outcomes we're expecting out of them. So that's said and done. This is where we are. And the transfer payment agreements will also spell out the fact that if those matters are not complied with, further transfers will be halted in this regard. So we are quite serious and keen in making sure we clean up house, which brings me to the issues raised by Honorable Dango around particularly PRASA. Let me highlight this thing that PRASA, Chair, we are at a very, how do I put it, a heightened state for us with PRASA in its turnaround. And as you may know, just in the previous week, PRASA board has released 7 executives. And just a month ago after appointment, you are aware that we have already released a further. And this now, I'm talking about senior executives. I'm not talking just management or junior officials. I'm talking senior executives, quite senior. And previously, you may also be aware that there has been dismissals of a number of those that have been found wrong. We have went, combed the reports of the AG, combed the reports of the public protector, the run done by the National Treasury's GTEC, and we have out of all of that listed the issues that the board needs to follow up, the new board needs to follow up and see to finality, and the board has been following up on all of those. There is a 9-point action plan given to the board to pursue and to implement on all of that. It has been reduced to a shareholder compact. And the cleanup at PRASA and consequence management is at its heightened level. Just yesterday, we were discussing and briefing our own minister about all cases at PRASA and how many cases are before the court, how many are at CCMA, how many are in the bargaining chamber, how many are at disciplinary level, and how many are at the report stage, and how many dismissals we have effected, and all of that. And you can see that the cleanup at PRASA is quite robust as we speak. The stabilization of its finances, key. Security at PRASA improving. All the indicators are now on the up, and this is why we say when we started, we did promise the committee that we will have a cleanup at PRASA and that we will get the rogues and the rogue elements out, and that no stain will be left unturned. We have insourced now, by agreement with the SIU, a full-time investigators of the SIU stationed at PRASA. Currently, 56 cases are under investigation by the SIU, and with a recovery of money having already commenced. Are we doing anything about the people who were the no-shows and who were booked accommodation and did not pitch and so on? Yes, all of them have received letters from me asking for reasons why the money shouldn't be recovered from them. And recovery from some of them has already commenced, particularly where the reasons are not sound. But where the reasons are sound, for instance, we had paid and the conference for which a person had to go attend was cancelled at the last moment, and we were levied 100% cancellation fee. For we couldn't insist on saying the employee must just go sleep at that hotel anyway because we had already paid. Under those circumstances where the reasons are beyond the control, we still report it as fruitless and wasteful expenditure. But we are now expected to, with the disposal committee, to generalize the entry and cancel the debt. So, and that we record as loss in this regard. But we disclose that fully and in the notes in this regard. So that accounting treatment is as agreed with the AG and how we are dealing with it in this regard. And it will be ongoing, Chair. We have reduced this significantly in this regard. We have also now engaged with the travel agent to say that the accommodation it gets for us, yes, we must have a hold for late arrival, but that hold must be utilized sparingly so that we do not attract 100% cancellation fees. And the briefing and the mandate has now been given to the in terms of the SLA. So that concludes, Chair, the questions that I've been asked, except for the fact that we'll have to come back to Honorable Boshoff with the breakdown of the routes on the RAMS program. Thank you.
No, thanks, Gigi. Earlier on, I overlooked the questions on the chat that were posed by Honorable Matebula. Maybe what you could do, could just request the committee secretary just to read those questions. And then just the last from my side, the road accident fund, of course, we are mindful of the fact that it is at the deficit of, I think, 59 billion in terms of the documents that we received, which is an increase now on the accumulated deficit of 322 billion. The reason why I'm raising this question relates to some of the requests and calls that we received from members of the public. I suspect this is the result of the frustration that they get from the office of the CEO of Road Accident Fund. I think what is quite probably just as a point of emphasis is the need for the office to communicate with stakeholders, particularly the challenges that some of the legal professionals might be facing as a result of this deficit. That is the reason why I preface my point with an emphasis on the accumulated deficit of the road accident fund. Imagine from some of the interviews that one had arising out of the last meeting that the Select Committee had with Praza. I had an interview with two of the radio stations, national ones. So from there, one of the advocates then phoned me to say, look, this is the frustration that we are getting as a result of the inability of the Road Accident Fund to create a platform to meet with us. The request probably will be for Estella van Rensburg, to probably respond to the email that was sent to her on the 21st of October 2020, because the call from the advocate Sooka was in relation to the email that she forwarded to the office of Ms. Estella van Rensburg on the 21st of October 2020. Of course, we are mindful of the challenges that the Road Accident Fund is going through. But at the same time, I believe that communication with the legal professionals, whether it's advocates or attorneys, is quite important, so that at least they are brought on board in terms of the challenges that the Road Accident Fund, but really its liquidity challenges that they are going through. Can we just, DG, can we just ask the committee secretary to read the questions posed by Honorable Bosch, Honorable Matibula, committee secretary?
Thank you, Chairperson. The first question is as follows. If the department has a plan to expand railway and road network of the country, especially in the metropolitan and in rural areas and in new special industrial zones and economic hubs. The second one, your department is amongst industry that suffer major blow due to the corruption, especially in the building of roads and maintenance. Do your department consider to establish state-owned roads construction company? The next one, the Guiana testing station has been closed from 5th of January till today due to one staff found to have contracted corona. Can the department intervene in this matter?
Thank you, Committee Secretary. I see the hand of Honorable Tim Bratiseth. Is this an old hand or a new one, Honorable Tim?
Oh, Chair, it's a pensioner hand. I must be so old now.
No, thank you, Tim.
So I'm not a pensioner.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. Yes, indeed, we have plans to expand the rail network. And we have seen that the state monopoly won't help in expansion quickly. The quickest way to expand the rail network, particularly for underutilized branches, is actually to concession them out to the private sector and to third-party players and to PPPs. In this regard, those are our plans, and I had indeed briefed the committee that in the year under review, we have finalized both the guidelines as well as the framework for concessioning, and we had identified 10 to start with, and with prioritization of 2 for commuter rail. So yes, ultimately some of them, like this first 2 we are starting with, also go through the industrial parks that have just been revitalized by DTI. 2 of them are part of that. And therefore, yes, we will continuously look at how this works. And if it works very well, we will then expand it in this regard. So there's a lot of work being done at our level with Treasury, as well as DTI, as well as with Transnet and PRASA in this regard. On the issue of whether we were considering the roads construction company, truth be told is that not at this stage, primarily because we are from there. The roads, old roads agency, which is today's Sunrail, back then had two arms, and in the main, it was laying the roads itself via public works. And now we do know the challenges that has happened with that. And we also do know the compliance levels of the new road building standards that South Africa has subscribed to in terms of the ISO standards. And we also do know the safety requirements. So this is not just those old farm roads we're building these days. So the state internally has no such capacity, unless the mandate is to metamorphosize SANRAL into becoming this new agency. That will also be a construction company, because effectively, that's what it will mean. It is no longer just an agency that commission and concession issue concessions out for road building, but it will have to build the roads itself. Already, SANRAL is a referee and a player in the sense that there are roads where SANRAL is an operator itself. So I'm not so sure whether it will be a wiser decision to now even take it into a construction company to that extent. So it's not on our radar right now, but in government terms, with the limited experience I have in government now as a DG, I know that we can never say never. We will work with what works, and we will work with what is promising to work. And if indeed us becoming a road construction agency or company becomes a viable option, we should consider that. But I'm sure you have seen in terms of our plans and even in the MTF, there's no such provision of funding for us to acquire this. And you may also know that the challenges with the depletion of the yellow fleet of government at various tiers of government already. Our framework allows for provinces as well as for actually municipalities to actually provide their own roads and to build their own roads. At that level of government, there is no contradictions about whether a construction company or a municipality may also play the role as a contractor, because I know that even the city of Cape Town has yards and has all of this, and they fill potholes themselves. They don't necessarily give out to tender, but the employees of the municipalities actually do that work. So it's not a contradiction in nature, but it's simply just not on our radar at this point. We will have to look at the case for it, and if the case is sound, we can consider that. On the issue of the Giani testing station, we will look into it. We will check, we'll ask the RTMC right away to look at why. Is it closed this long? From the 5th till now is too long. The prescribed thing is that, yes, close it, disinfect, reopen, and isolate those that are having symptoms and that have tested positive. So this has been the guidelines we have issued previously around dealing with COVID and the service centers. So we will check why this one has been closed for this long. On the issue of Honorable Dango asking if did the department follow guidelines in effecting environments? The answer is yes, and we have done so. Thank you very much.
Thank you, DG, for the comprehensive response to the questions and engagement raised by honorable members. I want to believe that in the absence of any other hand, members are satisfied, which then leaves me with one task before the last one, to express our heartfelt gratitude to the team led by the Minister and the Director General. For the job well done, and we are looking forward to the processing of the issues that were raised in your measures to address some of the key issues that were raised in your annual report, and we will consistently check progress around those issues, and we will now take this opportunity to allow the team to exit while we as the committee finalize the last remaining item on the agenda, which is the minutes, minutes of the last previous meeting. So the DG, you are free to excuse us as the committee.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, DG. Honourable members, the last item on our agenda is the minutes of the a meeting held on the 25th of November 2020. It was the presentation of the annual report by the Department of Public Works. In terms of the minutes that is screened, you will realize that right at the beginning it deals with the attendees of the meeting and also the guests from the department, and then the input by the deputy minister. And then the presentation by the acting director general in terms of the mandate of and performance, and then committee comments and deliberations follows from 4.1 to 4.2, 4.3, 4.4, 4.5, 4.6, and then the consideration, which is number 5, and then the adjournment. Let me just open the floor to honourable members to digest whether is there any amendment, addition, or subtraction that honourable members would want to make to this minutes. In the absence of any hand, can we then get a move of the adoption of the minutes of the last meeting? Which was held on the 21st of November, 2020.
I'll propose, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Tim, for proposing. Can we get a seconder?
I'll second it, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Dango. Any counter view on the adoption of the minutes? Thank you, Honourable Members. Then that take us to the next item on the agenda, having adopted the minutes, to take this opportunity to formally express our appreciation and gratitude to your participation. Indeed, the meeting went quite well, very, very fruitful. The deliberations that were engaged take us forward in terms of exercising our oversight, but also holding the executive accountable in terms of key programmatic areas that were presented to us, both in terms of the strat plan, but also in terms of the annual performance plan, a reflection in terms of the issues raised by the IEG, by the Auditor General in terms of how the department performed both financially and non-financial areas of performance. So therefore, the meeting went quite well. Let me then formally close the meeting. And now the meeting is adjourned. Thank you, Honourable Member.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you.
And bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody. Chepo. Chupega. Thank you,
Chair.
Good.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you,
Chepo.
Thank you. Okay, Chair.
That's the bus.
Sure. Hey, Mr. Tupega, I'm training in Qatar, yo.
Yeah, no, give room. Sometimes it can kick you out, not because at least it's us.
Yeah, it was kicking me out. It kicked me out, and it brought me in, and it kicked me out, and I struggled to come back. But I came back eventually.
Yeah, well, as long as it lives, kick you, then we accept you. You know?
Bring you in. Yeah.
Hi, colleagues. Just want to say hi to you guys.
Hi, Sureshni.
Yeah.
How are you?
All good here. All good.
Yeah.
Sureshni, we have survived COVID.
It's still more to come. So let's hope.
We survived so far.
Yeah.
So far we have survived.
So far.
Yeah.
Because we don't know what happened the following day.
Yeah. No,
you know.
We still need to stay safe. All right, bye. Let me see what I can do.
Okay. Bye, colleagues. I'm ending now. I'm ending.
Okay, bye. Let me see what I can do. Bye.
Thank you.
Okay, sure.
Yeah.